You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Follow Up Boss, one of the leading CRMs, client relationship managers, for residential real estate. Tons of top producing agents and some of the fastest growing teams out there are using Follow Up Boss to increase lead conversion, eliminate busy work that you're not doing anyway, and frankly, deliver a higher class experience in real estate to everybody who chooses you as their realtor of choice. So if you're going to keep listening to this, which I know you will, there's more information and a personal review of Follow Up Boss. For more information, go to followupboss.com/crazy. Hello, friends. Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. I'm Lee Brown, and you are going to learn about something that could be perceived as boring, but there's a really great story here. And also, you're going to find out why my sponsor, Follow Up Boss, could be your best friend if you are interested in some different pathways in real estate. So tune in, enjoy this conversation with Brent Bowers. You may want a notepad because he's full of gems, and I'll see you on the other side. So, Brent, thanks for coming on the show. So tell my viewers and listeners a little bit about the Brent Bowers story. I know you're going to tell us why a rhino is coming through the wall behind you, but we'll hold off on that for a second. So where are you located? What do you do that has to do with real estate? And what's a little bit of story?
Lee, thanks for having me on this awesome show. Boy, you probably have one of the best podcast names there is out there. Well, let's just start back in 2007. Got my real estate license. I wanted to be a rock star real estate investor. I thought I had to have a real estate license for that because I was like, I'm going to check all the properties as they come across the MLS and I'm going to pick and choose what I want. I bought the first one that actually came across on the MLS, an agent that helped me get my license, had listed it. So I bought it from her, had to borrow the earnest money deposit from my great grandma. She said, hey, Brent, like this is going to come out of your inheritance if you don't pay me back. I said, don't worry, I'm getting a real estate commission for buying this house. So I did pay her back. I never saw that inheritance she was talking about, but that's okay. She still helped me out. So now I'm a landlord and a realtor within like 30 days in 2007. So that's really how I got kicked off. And then the rest is kind of history.
So you're the reason the market went into a great recession. You were the tipping point. You were the last one in the water that knocked us over the cliff.
Yeah, pretty much. I borrowed everything, 100% financing. I remember SunTrust Bank, which I think they went out of business too. SunTrust Bank gave me a line of credit for $12,000 like a month after I closed in this house because I needed to fix it up a little bit. So I had like 120% financing loan to value just because I had a pulse and a job and a good credit score.
And the wild thing is, like, we remember that now and it's so far-fetched because now there's so many other requirements to getting a property. But I had this kind of loan back then, like maybe it doesn't exist anymore. And I appreciate your memories, but it doesn't do you any good. But the sad part is that those loans, actually, they didn't all default. So let's just put that to rest. Not everybody that got some oddball 100% loan with money on top to do renovations went underwater because the people have bought houses for too much in the history of real estate. And you hang on to it, and eventually the market tends to catch up with you. You may not make as much as your neighbors, but you can get back to zero. So my curious question for that first house, were you buying it to keep it as a landlord or were you buying it to flip it?
I didn't know what flipping was back then. I didn't understand flipping. I understood you buy house, you rent it out for a little bit more and pay the mortgage, and hopefully there's some left over. And that was my strategy up until 2015 timeframe when I had bought so many houses. Now I'm super leveraged and I'm like, Jesus, this buy and hold strategy is super slow way to wealth type thing. So you're right. I did actually hold that house till 2019, rented it out, had two evictions. I learned a lot. Like I couldn't tell you the amount of education I received on that first property because I just pulled the darn trigger.
So it's interesting. You say leveraged, the rest of the world says debt. So just a reminder, friends, that's the nice way to say you're using somebody else's money, whether it's the bank or it's great grandma or it's your neighbor. And it's how people build a portfolio over time. Now, the amount of leverage you undertake is going to be your risk ratio. And so actually, let me show you my favorite risk reward thing here. Some of you are high risk, high reward. And so you'll sit at the top of the pyramid, but some of y'all need the stability of being at the baseline. And so you are low risk, where there are still rewards, but they're tempered. And making that shift can be huge, because I'm a low risk person myself. It took me forever to break out of buying single family houses because I was so scared of something that I had not lived in. And I don't come from big money. I come from farm people who don't have extras usually. So I'm curious for you, you're building a portfolio. You're doing it the old fashioned way of never sell real estate. I guess Warren Buffett probably says that, to never sell real estate that you own. But at some point, there's equity, there's gains, and you can do other things with it. So what was the tipping point for you to go from accumulating house by house to doing bigger things?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. So I did take a little bit of a break in 2008, 2009. I was really working that real estate license. I watched brokers get out of business that had 30 years experience, and it got in my head. I was like, man, there's no way I can do this. I'm just starting out. So I took a little bit of a break, joined the military, went to school, was out of the country for several years. I'm on my second deployment to Afghanistan. The Army decides to pull me out and send me to college to be an officer. So I go to Melbourne, Florida, and I bought another property, and then I bought another property. And so what kind of changed my thinking was, there's nothing wrong with this rental real estate, but I wasn't really seeing my loans pay down fast enough for what I would have wanted. They all needed fixed up. I was getting great deals, so I thought I was getting them below like what they were worth. And I was putting in sweat equity, putting in a lot of money, creating nice rentals. But one thing happened where I noticed, like, man, I've got a lot of debt on my American Express. I owe a lot of money to Home Depot on the Home Depot card. And I was just like going further and further in debt, and I didn't like it. And then I started having to pay for college courses and whatnot. So here I am again. I'm like, man, I'm a grown man and I feel broke. So I had always heard wholesaling was the best way to start in real estate. You don't need credit. You don't need money. So I downloaded a list, the notice of default, where they're basically in list pendants. They're not paying their mortgage. They're behind on paying their mortgage. And I went and door knocked about 10 or 12 properties in like a couple of hours. It didn't take me long. And lo and behold, pulled the deal out of it and got that property under contract for what the guy owed on it. He was going to the courthouse steps in 7 or 8 days. So they were about to kick him out of the house. I found the cash buyer looking for that property on Craigslist. I made a quick $4,500, and then that led to another one. So I'm now a wholesaler. So I did that a couple times and found a mentor. Fast forward about 12 months later, found the mentor. His name was Tom Kroll with Wholesaling Inc. I now have the honor to be a Wholesaling Inc. coach for land. I'm super excited about that. But the wholesaling was going okay. But as an Army officer, I was super busy and I couldn't go meet with sellers. If I didn't get that contract within like 15 minutes, I had to get back to work before someone realized I was gone. And I never got the deal. And I was searching for answers. And I heard about land and being able to buy land at pennies on the dollar and flipping this land overnight and making like 10x returns. I was like, I've got to implement that. So that's where the whole land journey began. I did a couple land deals in like a short period of time. And it was just probably I don't want to say the easiest thing I've ever done, but there was virtually no competition. I didn't deal with like seller emotion of living in the house for many years, and built a seller financing business around it that gives me now a passive income. It gives me time freedom, financial freedom, geography freedom, all these things. So it really kind of evolved into the land.
So when we talk about wholesaling, obviously there are people who are big proponents of it, and there are people that are like, that's really slimy and gross. But for wholesalers, the goal is generally to find a buyer for a property that would probably not be saleable in the normal market for lots and lots of reasons. And it could be the default status and the fees that are due. It could be a condition issue for somebody that doesn't take great care of their house. There's lots and lots of reasons for it. So when you have that real estate license, though, you're entrusted by the state with protecting the public trust and making sure that they're not basically being raked over the coals. How do you do that in wholesaling? Was it telling that first homeowner, look, it might be worth more and I can try and get that for you, but you're under a 7-day window. So if I can get your note covered, would you like me to help somebody? Do you show them both paths? What's the ethical way to handle that?
Absolutely. And that's a good point. I work with a lot of realtors. I am no longer a licensed real estate agent. I let my continuing educations rack, or I should have done all my continuing education, but I went to basic training and that was not possible. So I let my real estate license go, but I work with several agents as well, where they've got to disclose it like, hey, I'm a licensed realtor. They put it on there. And you want your client to always know all the options. Like, hey, you've got 7 days until they kick you out. We might be able to list this house, put it on the MLS, but you're not going to get a buyer that tries to get a loan, FHA, VA, conventional, you name it. I mean, some hard money lenders wouldn't even close in 7 days. That took a cash buyer with someone that had proof of funds for $160,000 in their bank account. So I find that people find that wholesaling is slimy, or maybe have that misconception. I know Bigger Pockets doesn't like it either, but it's when they don't understand it. I can't tell you. I mean, I've wholesaled probably 100 houses now at this point. And we give them all their options. And most of the time, they're dead set against not using a realtor. But when they are wanting to use a realtor, oh my gosh, like sometimes that's the best situation for them. You got to hook them up with that right realtor that's going to take care of them. So you just got to really see what's the, all it is solving a problem. Yeah. It's not even about the house. It's what is the challenge.
Or the land, not the house.
That's right. Yeah.
But the reality here is, friends, if you're looking at wholesaling, hear us when we say there's a correct way to do it, and then there's the slimy way. Don't choose the slimy way. Make sure that your neighbors know there are realtors, there's time and money involved, and figure out what their needs are, because a wholesaler can actually be a solution provider. So I want to know how you moved into the land side. You mentioned it takes the emotion out. Do you get to see the crazy stories when you're dealing with land, and what part of the country? You said you're not geographically bound, but are there areas that are more attractive than others? And by the way, with Bill Gates being the world's largest owner of farmland, which bothers me on every part of my being, are you a part of the solution to that? And give us some insights on the land side, especially when it comes to people who need to move it. It's slow, right? Land is slower in real estate than houses are.
Yeah. I mean, so no, that is crazy, actually, that Bill Gates is buying up all this land. And
I don't like it at all. I'm not going to lie to you. Something ain't right.
Yeah, it's a little odd controlling farmland, but I don't deal in a lot of farmland. So I would say him and I are not colliding whatsoever. We could possibly be on parallel paths. And going back to what you said,
you'd take him though, right, Brent? You'd take him?
I mean, I'm pretty sure I could take him in a fight, but I don't know about financially. Like,
we'll give it a minute.
So, but he looks pretty smart. Like, I would have to probably wear him down pretty good. But anyhow, whole nother subject.
Oh, it's not meat. So you'll be stronger than him anyway.
You mentioned a good point, like going back probably a minute or two ago. Success for me is sleeping well at night, knowing that we help that seller, because it's really solving a challenge, whether it be land, apartment complex, a 32 unit, mobile home park, all these things. I'm not against buying any of it. Like people ask me all the time, what kind of deals do you not like doing? The ones that are not profitable, like the one I did in 2007. I don't like doing those. That was not profitable mentally and education. Yes, it was. But like the crazy land stories, it is a little slower in land. And a lot of people can't get financing on land. So you got to get a little creative. There's no box. You got to get out of the box if there is a box. And a lot of times, like I really love Florida. I love Colorado and Arizona and Utah. And we just moved into Arkansas. And as far as the land that we're going after, usually it's people just kind of on the outskirts, or they inherited it, or they're behind on taxes. And most of the time, they don't care what you pay for it. They're just like, sometimes they'll even give you the price. I'm not going after the stuff that's like right next to a skyscraper where the seller is Donald Trump and he knows it's worth $10 million. And then if you develop it a little bit, it's worth $20 million. I'm not going after that stuff. I'm going after like the inefficient parcels, like the stuff on the outskirts of town or that last vacant lot in the neighborhood. And there's multiple ways you can do it. My preferred method is I'll buy it for 20, 30, 40 cents on the dollar. Let's just say it's worth, I don't know, $10,000 for easy math, $10,000. I'm going to pay $2,000 for it. And I'm going to sell it to someone for $10,000, but I'm going to offer it to them for $1,000 down, $500 a month for 60 months at 9% interest. I'm going to give them the gold and I'm going to let them finance it too, because most Americans think on payments.
Okay. So hang on a second. You are acting as the bank. So you're using your cash to buy it for what they're willing to sell it for. They don't want it. They're not using it. We don't need this piece of dirt. And then you're selling it for market value. So you're not going to some unsustainable number, but you are becoming the bank for somebody. Is this mainly for people that are they looking for a hunting lease, or are they looking for somewhere to build their own house or somewhere for, you know, build a dirt track? Why are people buying these parcels of land and doing seller financing?
Everything you mentioned right there, just to have a piece of America to one day build that dream home, take their kids out camping, roast marshmallows, like you name it. And my avatar, who's my avatar? It's usually a person that lives paycheck to paycheck. They can afford $200, $300, $400, $500 a month. And yeah, we're being the bank. We're providing that dream land that they want, plus offering them the easy financing for it. And once they pay it off, we transfer it to them. And then we'll also do the city lots or the infill buildable lots, the stuff that's in town. There's water and sewer and electric close by. And generally, I don't really finance those because it's either a builder or a house flipper. Someone that's tired is chasing after the stinky old cat pee houses and having to bid at foreclosure auctions. They want to control the process. So we'll get that land under contract at 50, 60 cents on the dollar and sell it to a builder at 90 cents on the dollar. So if we get it under contract at $50,000, it's worth $100,000, and we sell it for $90,000, that's a quick $40,000 profit. So there's huge cash. And I love working with realtors on this kind of stuff because realtors always know when there's a piece of land available, or they just sold a house for someone and they got this land, they don't know what to do with it, or vice versa. The realtor knows the builder and it's like, hey, you want to build this new spec home? Like, I've got the lot for you right here.
Okay. So I told y'all that I would do a review of Follow Up Boss, you know, because I'm your friend in real estate. And I did. Now, you know, there's a Blue Million CRM out there. I mean, if you go to any Facebook group, every realtor's like, which one should I use? Which one should I use? And you know that these CRM, which are client relationship managers or customer relationship manager, whatever you want to call it, it's truly a system that's just designed to help you know what to do next, because you're very busy and you're a multitasker in real estate. With all those different tasks and balls up in the air, you need something to help you stay on track. And that's what Follow Up Boss does. Now, when you save a name and a phone number in there, that is basically a Rolodex. Follow Up Boss is going to take the names and phone numbers and also help you know what to do next, so you can maintain these relationships with your neighbors, because that's what this is about. Real estate is not about serving just prospects and clients. It's about taking great care of your neighbors' needs in real estate. And if you'll use a tool like Follow Up Boss, where they remember you, oh, they might even call you when they're ready to buy or sell again, or when their mom and daddy do, or their best friend or their kid, and you want to be top of mind. That's what a product like Follow Up Boss will do for you. Truly, it's going to change your business when you start paying better attention to people. They don't have to know you use Follow Up Boss, but they'll totally understand that they are being heard by you. So now there's a free trial for my people because you're loved. Go to followupboss.com/crazy. No credit card is required. And frankly, because you're my people and we made an ask for you, Follow Up Boss said, yes, yeah, so you get double the free trial. That's actually enough time to log in, put some pieces in it, and watch it change your business as it has for so many realtors and teams nationwide. Again, go to followupboss.com/crazy to start your free trial today. So when you're trying to find these parcels of land and you find one, how many contacts do you have to make before you're getting a hold of somebody? Is there a system that you use to find phone numbers and not pester people to death? Because you're providing solutions. But of course, in today's world, everybody's got walls up and they're very hesitant about being scammed. So how many contacts would you say it takes to get one parcel owner to sit down and chat with you?
You know what? That's funny you asked that, because it's changed quite a bit since COVID. It's turned land into a seller's market in the last 18 months. And, you know, speaking of the crazy stuff in real estate, I had a realtor, which is also an attorney, sue me for texting him 3 times and a phone call. We accidentally phone called him too. So it added a fourth. Was quite the battle. I lost in court on that one, but he was one of my cash buyers I thought was interested in some deals we had. And he's a professional litigator. Long story short, but I used to call people, I used to text people, but I kind of backed off after I was in court for about a year and a half and got sued. But now I mail. I'll either send what I call the LOL, the land offer letter, which gives them an offer for their land. And why I call it the LOL is like every time we get one back, it's like we just got a piece of land under contract for less than 50 cents on the dollar. So I used to have to only send out 100 of those to get one deal. Then it turned into 200 to get one deal, which is about a half percent acceptance rate. And then we like to kind of switch back and forth between postcards and the LOLs. Postcards are simple. It says, hey, I'd like to buy your land located at 123 Main Street. Now we find that we send about 300 or 400 of those out. We'll get a bunch of phone calls. Out of every 400, we'll convert one deal. I don't really like to track response rate because it's kind of a weird number, but I like to track like, okay, I got to spend this much to make this much, or I got to spend this much to get one contract. And I call a contract the piece of land we're purchasing. So 400 postcards, 300 LOLs to answer your question in a shorter way.
And that going to the same list. So you send to the same people all the time. You're just constantly reminding them that you're available to help them if they want you.
I give it about a 12-week rest cycle once a quarter because I don't want to piss anybody off, which you do. You can offer them over retail and you're still going to piss them off. Some people anyways, but those are not the people selling us land. Like we're looking for the people that want to hear from us. So yeah, about every 12 weeks. And that's why I'm in multiple markets because amount of land out there, there's tons of land in the United States, but it's not like houses. There's not as many of them available. Kind of like people, there's a reason why the banks do a 30-year mortgage. They know that people are going to move every 5 to 7 years. So realtors, like every 5 years, you're going to be listing that house. I think it's actually more like 2 or 3 now. Because I was military, I moved every 2 years.
Well, with COVID, it's actually gotten closer to 10 because people are not leaving because of the inventory being down. But as things get back to normal, I do think it'll shorten up again because people get bored, right? I think there's a lot of that American spirit is let's go do something new. Whereas our parents and grandparents stayed put for 40 and 50 years. They built the house and stayed put. But I think military markets, of course, do tend to move a little bit faster because when your duty station changes, you're not going to be able to say, I'd rather just stay in my house. That's not really an option. So I got to ask a question about the realtor. So he was one of your buyers. He had indicated interest and then wanted to sue you because you kept sending him information.
Yeah, we figured out how it happened. We actually traded cash buyers list with another friend of mine that was a wholesaler. And I think he got it from a list called Dr. Bill's list, which had the realtors on it. And I just assumed, like, I think I'm a simple guy. I'm not really that, like, I wouldn't call myself like very sophisticated, but I just assume if you have a real estate license, you probably have buyers and you're probably interested in off-market deals. Well, that guy wasn't. He was interested in suing guys like me.
You're so optimistic.
So yeah, he made his living. He actually got me and two of my buddies all about the same time and he got them and I was like, I'm going to fight them. So I did. And I spent a lot of money on legal assistance and it didn't work.
That's crazy to me. And just spoiler alert, friends, if you don't like the mail that you're getting, unsubscribe and then delete. Don't be like this guy. Don't be litigating to make a living because that makes all of our lives more expensive when a Brent loses because the guy's a professional litigator. I'm just going to point that out. We are sometimes so happy. All right. So in the process of working through your own life, your investments, being a bank for people that are going to go buy their piece of land, seller financing, you have to have seen something that still makes you go, I cannot believe this happened. My show's all about crazy stories. And I'm pretty sure that realtor litigator was not it, but it jumped at me. I want to know what the real story is, Brent. What's the cocktail story you tell when you're having a nice beverage on ice and say, you know what? Y'all never going to believe what happened today.
You know what? My mentor once told me, he said, you know what? If investing isn't exciting for you, or if you're in an investment and it's exciting, it's probably not a good investment. So I will say land is very boring for me. It's one of those things. We buy it at 30 cents on the dollar. We sell it for 100 cents on the dollar. We make interest on our money. We're now doing 30-year mortgages because like you have a $200,000 loan at 6%. You're going to collect back 420. It's not really 6%. So that's been really boring. But I'll say the craziest story I ever did was one of my first house deals. And I'm the land guy. I'm going to talk about houses here. But the thing I can think of.
Is this the hashtag why Brent likes land better story?
It is. I have a 19-unit apartment complex. I'm not the only owner. I've got some partners in it. I've also got an office building that's sitting vacant right now. I can't rent that thing for the life of me. I'm thinking about giving it away. Maybe someone will take it then. So I've struck out a lot on buildings, apartments, and offices and houses, but the land, I always make money in it. Well, let me give you one that just comes to mind right off the bat. It was the first property I purchased. Actually, we call it wholetail. I was going to buy it, clean out all the crack needles, and put it on the MLS. So we purchased this land. I'm actually doing a mission in Kentucky at the time. So I'm purchasing a house, not the land. I said land, a house in Colorado Springs. The seller calls me. His name was Gabriel. And he's like, yeah, I'll take $40,000. Well, I knew the house was worth about $100,000 as is. So I'm like, this is crazy. There's no way this is happening. So I sent a mobile notary. I was like, are you sure you don't want to list this with a realtor? He's like, no way. I'm not listening with a realtor. Like, he had his reason. And I was like, okay. So I sent a mobile notary with a purchase agreement. Like, you don't have to do that, but I did. So I sent it. I get it to the title company, Land Title at the time. And Land Title comes back and says, nope, there's a cloud on this title. Basically, for the listeners, like, the title company was not going to insure it, but they wouldn't even help me transfer it. The reason the cloud on this title was a quit claim deed was done previously, like almost 6 months prior to me sending this guy a postcard. Well, the seller, Gabriel, had bailed his best friend out of jail, brought a notary along while he did it, and held his best friend at knife point. And his best friend had just inherited this property from his grandparents. They left it to him, but he had a problem with drugs. And we'll call him Cody. And so Cody now transfers the property to Gabriel at knife point in front of a notary. And now Gabriel is selling Brent the house for roughly about $40,000. Well, we figured this out with the title company. The heir is coming clean now. And now Cody is in prison in Canyon City. That's one of the Canyon City has the prisons with all the crazy, really bad people in it. So I get a real estate attorney involved because I'm like, how do we do this deal? We got a hold of Cody. Cody says, yes, I'd like to sell. I'd love to be paid for the house too. So I've now sent a real estate attorney to see Cody multiple times in prison to get paperwork signed, probate paperwork signed, because they didn't do proper probate with the grandparents. And Gabriel's still in the deal. He's still going to get some funds for holding his friend at knife point. And 6 months later go by, and I've got a lot of legal fees into this. I've sent an attorney to prison multiple times. They won't let me into the prison. And it's just like, oh my God, this is crazy. So long story short, 6 months go by. It's time to go to the closing table. Gabriel's going to get about 20,000. Cody's going to get 20,000. Well, we're about 12 hours shy from closing. And guess what? Cody's got a brother we just find out about. So here we go again, round four with the attorney. We get Cody's brother on the line here. He comes to closing, and I left a part out, actually. This was multiple years ago. Cody gets out of prison, and I want to help this guy while I'm buying his house. And I had an extra car available. So during this whole time, Cody's been driving my spare car with his pregnant girlfriend that's about to give birth. And finally, we get Cody's brother to agree to sell as well. They all split 40 grand. I get the house. Cody won't give me my car back. So I'm like, dude, if you don't give him my car back, I'm calling the police. The police say, hey, you gave him the keys. This is not criminal. You need to go to court for this. And I'm like, son of a gun. So long story short, Cody gives me the car back, says thank you. We clean all the needles out of this house. We list it for like $100,000. And after all the legal fees and whatnot, I still made about $50,000. And it took about a year to do it. So that's the craziest one I could think of.
I can't even connect the dots on that. And all I can think is that best phrase that you accidentally uttered is one so many people would like to say, where you said, I sent the attorney to jail. I mean, you got to say, I sent an attorney to jail. But Gabriel owed the bail money, so he needed the money from Cody's house, and that's why he held Cody at knife point, because he knew Cody was available and going to be weak because of his drugs. Is that what it was? Okay, so I was just making sure I got the bail story straight. And luckily there were no cops. Because if the pregnant girlfriend had been married to Cody, she'd have had to sign things too. So,
oh, how do you think about that?
Aren't we glad that, you know, I mean, I'm a supporter of the nuclear family and of marriage in general, but in that particular scenario, I think we can all be glad that he had not carried her over to the little chapel that could yet. And the reality of this, friends, is that a story like that examines exactly why a professional in whatever field they're in, whether you're doing wholesale investing or you're a realtor, you have to have a whole stable of people that will back you up. So to Brent's success in getting out of that, it took a good real estate attorney. It took notary contacts. It took a lot of conversations with the title company, because all those are outside of the scope of expertise of what you're working in sometimes. So even if you're saying to me, but Lee, I am just an investor, not an excuse, at least find yourself a realtor who's got their own stable of pros, because these kind of scenarios are going to come up. And I guess the lucky part for you, Brent, is that you didn't wind up underwater on the house, and you actually did provide solutions, because it sounded like Gabriel needed the cash more than the house. Cody needed the cash more than the house. And definitely the pregnant girlfriend was going to probably need some diapers. And we don't know nothing about that brother, but I bet he's glad that he got his cash and probably went back into the hills right after that.
Yeah, I actually talked to the brother a little bit afterwards because I wanted to check on Cody, see how he was doing. So I lost communication with Cody, but the brother did say, like, Cody was like, because me and the brother kind of continued the conversation. And like, yeah, this house was nuts. Like, we ended up having squatters move in during this whole process. And I can't even tell you, like, I made $50,000 because my realtor was like really good. His name is Colin Smith with Solid Rock Realty in Colorado Springs. We started a real estate meetup together, and this attorney would come and speak for us. And he says, yeah, I went to jail for Brent multiple times. But so it's pretty funny when you have your attorney saying that. But Colin, man, we must have got 10 offers on this house. And it was almost like a bidding war. And the realtor was like, I'm telling you, he was like an auctioneer. So kudos to him. And then I also built my cash buyers list with that, because if they were interested in that dirty old house.
You said, have I got a deal for you? But the squatters are not on me. We call the police department for that. Brent, if somebody's interested in learning more about wholesaling land or finding out about the coaching and the consulting that you're doing, how do they find you in the wide world of the internet?
Thanks so much for asking, Lee. I just launched a YouTube channel a few months ago. If you search Brent Bowers on YouTube, you'll find me. And my program's called thelandsharks.com. Thanks for asking.
So all of that is in the show notes for this episode. And I highly recommend that if you're thinking about land and you find it to be incredibly boring, that you reach out to Brent, because he already told you he finds it to be boring too, but it's also profitable when you do it the right way and you stick to your ethics and competence, no matter your real estate license status. Brent, thank you so much for coming on the show and for giving us a lot of different insights today. I'm really grateful for you being willing to share your expertise.
Yeah, you got a great show. Keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, friends, make sure you connect with Brent in the show notes for this episode. And actually, if you're thinking about following up with all of those people you're talking to, check out our sponsor, followupboss.com/crazy, because maybe that would help you stay connected to people. Hit subscribe, go 5 stars. I'll see you next time. Okay, now don't forget to go try Follow Up Boss so that your business can continue to expand in professionalism, and then you can meet some more crazy people yourself. I really appreciate Follow Up Boss sponsoring this episode, but mainly I appreciate them for giving y'all double the free trial time with no credit card required. So make sure you go to followupboss.com/crazy and then let me know what you think. I'll see you guys next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one-up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.